The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, that was an extremely shocking Thursday night football game we had last night. I mean, kind of with the way the Bills have played this season, they haven't showed up against terrible-ass teams. And this was another terrible-ass team because, I'm sorry, Houston is not good at all this year, except on the defensive side of the ball, which showed last night for sure. But got to say, I mean, I expected this to be an ass-kicking by Buffalo, but Houston just took it to them. Houston on the offensive side of the ball really couldn't do much. But on the defensive side of the ball, they took care of business and made the big plays when they had to. As a matter of fact, this game, score-wise, it's close, but it should not. The game was not this close. It ended up being 23-19 win by the Houston Texans. But, I mean, honestly, Buffalo was lucky to score one of their touchdowns just because it was on a kick return. So, and it was just one of those random kick returns too. It just randomly happened. And other than that, they weren't able to get anything going because like I've been talking about with this Buffalo Bills team all season is that the offensive side of the ball relies too much on Josh Allen. Now, when Josh Allen is on and other dudes are stepping up around him, it's great. Things are going well. But if this offensive line plays like they did last night and he's on his ass, I mean, he was sacked 8 times last night. That is a career high for Josh Allen in his entire career. He threw 2 interceptions, and the Texans forced two forced fumbles as well. So it was a big night from this Texans defense. I mean, they really, really got at Josh Allen. They even had a couple of blocked passes that were big. I mean, it was just all around suffocation by the Houston Texans defense. Their offense did just enough to get some points, but Buffalo looked bad. They looked terrible. And that's what I mean about this season in the NFL. There is so much parity that still, to this day, up to Thanksgiving week, like next week is Thanksgiving, y'all, and we don't know, you can't pinpoint who the Super Bowl champion is right now. I mean, yes, there's a lot of football to play, but usually at this time of year, you could kind of tell who's pulling away, who's the really good team, who's the okay team, who might make a run. Right now, couldn't tell you on any of those levels other than who are the shitty teams in the league. But even so, the shitty teams are stepping it up against these good teams, and that's what the Texans did, man. They offensively looked terrible, but defensively held it out and went up against a good-ass Buffalo Bills team and took it right to them. The Bills never had a chance in this one. Other than when they came out and had the lead, they scored the first touchdown. That was it. That was the one and only time the Bills looked good on offense in this game. Other than that, they looked pretty terrible. And just another weird-ass game from another weird-ass season, and I'm here for it. All right, so let's get into the rest of Week 12 and what we've got going on for the rest of this weekend. Also, with my head-to-head matchup between the homie Simon Ruvalcaba, we both went 12-3 last week, so we are still tied up at 106 wins and 57 losses, and we started the weekend off with a loss because we both had the Buffalo Bills last night. So let's get on to the rest of the week and what we've got coming up on Sunday. First matchup we have is between the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Bears are a 3.5-point favorite. Aaron Rodgers looks like he suffered some type of fracture in his wrist. He's not going to require surgery, and they're saying there's a possibility he's going to play this weekend. If he was healthy, I actually probably would take the Steelers in this one because Aaron Rodgers does own the Chicago Bears. He owns Chicago itself. Like, he has always kicked the Chicago Bears' ass in Chicago specifically. They hate Aaron Rodgers, and they are probably wanting him to be healthy because they want to see him get his ass kicked. But I don't think we're getting a healthy Aaron Rodgers, and he may not even play. Now, of course, he wants to play in this one, but we just don't know how it's going to go. So with that being said, with an unhealthy Aaron Rodgers potentially not playing in this one, I'm leaning towards Chicago. They're at home. I think this is going to be a battle of two solid defenses just to start. I think this is going to be a game where it could potentially be like turnover central, where it's like Pittsburgh comes out and starts driving and then Chicago forces a turnover. And then Chicago starts driving and Pittsburgh causes a turnover. And I feel like it's going to be one of those weird games where it's going to be like field goals or random turnovers. Maybe even some type of safety happens in this game. But I just feel like this is going to be all defense all day. But with an unhealthy Aaron Rodgers, I'm leaning towards Chicago in a close one, 21-20. But if Aaron Rodgers plays, that would change how I feel about the game. But since, you know, I make my picks and I stick with my picks, I'm going with Chicago in this one, 21-20. Then we have the New England Patriots at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Patriots are a 7.5-point favorite. The Bengals, they just don't look good at all. There's going to be no Ja'Marr Chase in this one, so their offense is going to suffer even worse. I mean, all they have going for them is Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and that's about it. Their defense is trash, and they just have nothing else going on, whereas the New England Patriots, they are dominating right now. They look solid on the offensive side of the ball, and they look stout on the defensive side of the ball, and I expect them to take it to Cincinnati in this one and just kick their ass 30-17. Then we have the New York Giants at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are an 11.5-point favorite. Jackson Dart, don't know if he's going to play due to his concussion. I kind of feel like you might want to just keep sitting him because the Giants don't really have anything to play for. They're not going to be a playoff-bound team. Even though there's a lot of parity right now for the playoffs, the Giants are not a team that are in contention for any type of playoffs. Of course, you want to see what Jackson Dart's got, but if the dude is suffering from a concussion, I kind of feel like you just might as well let him roll. And let him play if he has to, but I don't see a problem with him sitting another week because you're going up against the Detroit Lions, and I just feel like Detroit's pissed off. Detroit's coming off of a loss, and they're just probably ready to kick some ass. They're at home. I kind of feel like this is going to be a Detroit Lions game where it's like they basically score on every drive, and I've got the Detroit Lions winning easily 41-14. Then we have the Minnesota Vikings at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 6.5-point favorite, and the Vikings just look bad. They just haven't found an identity, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, defensively, they're taking care of business, but you can only do so much if your offense can't score, especially when J.J. McCarthy is throwing interceptions or fumbling the football or just getting sacked, and then they got to kick the ball. And then the defense has to come back out there. And then you've got the Green Bay Packers, who just are playing the weirdest football of all this season. They step it up in certain cases, but then sometimes they just hit a brick wall and they just don't know what the hell they're doing. And they play down to some of their opponents. I mean, they lost to the Panthers and the Browns this year, so they just really haven't played well. And they're just not consistent. They just are a weird team themselves. So with that being said, I mean, this is a division battle. So I expect, regardless of how these two teams are playing right now, I feel like this is going to be a battle. And I kind of feel like it's going to be a defensive battle with the Green Bay Packers offense just doing enough to get the job done. It doesn't look like the Packers are going to have Josh Jacobs in this one, which I feel like is going to be huge for them offensively because they already are light at the receiver position. They don't really have a number one go-to guy for Jordan Love. I mean, Jordan Love is having a lights out year. I feel like Jordan Love would probably be leading the league in a lot of statistical categories if he just had like a number one dude to go to, but he doesn't. And now that Jacobs is out, that's probably going to affect the way this game is played. So I feel like it's just going to be a defensive battle. I feel like it's going to be a really solid battle between two divisional matchup teams. But I do have the Green Bay Packers winning just because they're more reliable and they're better on the offensive side of the ball than the Vikings. I've got the Packers winning a close one, 24-20. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Seahawks are a 12.5-point favorite, coming off of a tough loss last week to the Rams. So I just kind of feel like, with that being said, the Seahawks tend to bounce back from their losses big, and the Titans are just trash. The Titans are literally one of the worst teams this season. They are another team that's just completely out of it. Doesn't matter what they do, doesn't matter who they play, they are just trash. Whereas Seattle coming in pissed off, defense playing excellent, offense playing well, and I just kind of expect, you know, Sam Darnold had 4 interceptions last week. I feel like he's going to come out and potentially have like 3 or 4 touchdowns in this one. I've got Seattle rolling 35-17. Then we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite, and this one was tough for me because just looking at it, The Colts are easily the better team. Kansas City's offense is trash. It's basically a wing and a prayer, or a Mahomes and a prayer for them. It's Mahomes running for his life and just tossing up what he can and just hoping somebody makes a play downfield. And lots of times that works out for them because they're the Chiefs. But in these close matchups, they have not fared well at all. Now, they do play better at home, but this Colts team ain't no joke. They haven't fallen off. They have stepped it up when they've had to. They play well on the road. They play well at home. They play well against the good teams. They will play well against the bad teams. And I just don't really see a weakness in this Colts team. As a matter of fact, I see them progressively getting better with each and every game, whereas the Chiefs, they don't have a ground game. And like I said, it's just Mahomes on the offensive side of the ball. And then their defense is good. But if their defense is just always out on the field, it's going to catch up to them. And I just feel like they're running into a buzzsaw with Jonathan Taylor, because Jonathan Taylor is in beast mode right now. He is obviously the MVP of the league. But like I keep saying, he's not going to get it because he's a running back. But he's the MVP of the league. And I feel like this is going to be a Jonathan Taylor game. If Jonathan Taylor has a lights out game, this is going to be Colts. If the Chiefs are able to contain Jonathan Taylor as best they can, then Chiefs are going to get this win. But I just feel like the Colts are the better team. The Colts are playing better football, and I feel like it's going to be a Jonathan Taylor game. This Colts defense, very sneaky, and I just think they're going to do what they can to just mess with Mahomes as best you can and just do what they can to get the wins. And also, you take a look at the Chiefs, they're not doing the little things right. I mean, hell, even on the special team side of things, Harrison Butker, he's been missing extra points. He's been missing field goals just in general. And kickoffs have been a problem for him. He's had a couple of kickoffs that have gone out of bounds and set teams up in really solid position to begin a drive at the 40-yard line. So there's just really a lot of issues with this Kansas City Chiefs team. And while it's tough to count them out, and I really wouldn't be surprised if they win this one, I'm going with the Colts in this one. I just think Jonathan Taylor is going to go off, and I think the Colts defense is going to do just enough to do what they can to stop Mahomes, and I've got the Colts winning a close one, 23-20. Then we have the New York Jets at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 14.5-point favorite. The Jets are another team completely out of it, completely terrible, really nothing to play for. Whereas Baltimore, they're actually on the upside of things. They started off the season trash, but now they're on a 5-game winning streak, looking pretty good. Lamar Jackson's looking healthy. They're really starting to put some things together on the offensive side of the ball, starting to get more healthy on the defensive side of the ball, and really starting to look like the old Baltimore Ravens. Whereas, like I said, the Jets are trash. I feel like this is going to be all Ravens all day, offense, defense, special teams, every way you look at it. I think the Ravens are going to have basically a perfect game. I've got the Ravens winning 40-13. Then our afternoon games are the Cleveland Browns at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Raiders are a 3.5-point favorite. To me, I actually look at Cleveland as having the edge in this one simply because Cleveland's defense is phenomenal. Myles Garrett leads the league in sacks with 15 sacks and has got 10 of them in the last three fucking games. This guy is just a beast. And it's not just him. I mean, he's the anchor of the defense, but they're excellent in the secondary. Their front seven is just suffocating, and it just sucks because their offense is horrific. And Shedeur Sanders expected to start this week, so we'll see what he's got in a full start. Last week, he just came in the second half and looked horrible. But lucky for him, the Raiders are not a good team. And that's what I'm looking at in this one. The Raiders have nothing going on. Offensively, they are horrible. Geno Smith is give or take. It's either he gets a lot of touchdowns or he gets a lot of interceptions and just plays straight up terrible football. Then beyond him, he doesn't really have a go-to guy besides Brock Bowers, who has been injured and then healthy and then injured and then healthy. So you never know what you're going to get there. Ashton Jeanty, he's a rookie. So I know a lot of people had high expectations for him, but you got to understand the dude's got to grow still. I mean, he's a rookie for Christ's sake. So he's not really panning out the way they were hoping. And then defensively, it's just Max Crosby against everybody else. And it's like if you just double team or triple team Max Crosby, ain't shit going on with this Raiders defense. So I just look at it and I think the Cleveland Browns have the edge because I feel like this is going to be a defensively anchored game. I feel like it's going to be one of those ugly ass games where it's just like field goal, field goal, field goal, or a safety or something weird happens in this one. And with that being said, I give the edge to the Cleveland Browns because of their defense, because of Myles Garrett. Don't be shocked if Myles Garrett has a couple more sacks, maybe even like a blocked field goal and a touchdown just to elevate his greatness for a shitty ass team. But he may, I've got them finally getting a win in this one, 17-13. Then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, the Jaguars are 2.5-point favorite. Defensively, the Jaguars are still playing excellent football. Offensively, still trying to find their way. Haven't really found an identity just yet. And the Cardinals, they're just battling injuries. But even beyond the injuries, they really aren't that good. But Jacoby Brissett, he is playing really solid at the quarterback position. But even so, they still can't get the wins. Defensively, they're starting to make strides, starting to find an identity, and I feel like that's going to play out well for them in this one because Jacksonville's just not that good on the offensive side of the ball. But Jacksonville, to me, is the better team, and I just kind of feel like Jacksonville's going to walk into this one and just make enough of the plays that they have to get the win. I've got the Jaguars winning this one 24-16. Then we have the Philadelphia Eagles at the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Eagles are a 4.5-point favorite. And the Eagles, they really, you know, they're winning how they did last year. They're winning ugly, winning in different ways, winning with the running game, winning with the passing game, winning with defense. But it's definitely this defense is playing really solid football. The Cowboys, on the other hand, offensively are lights out, but defensively started off the season terrible. They've had their moments. Looked improved last week because we did, you know, we got Quinnen Williams who had 1.5 sacks, made an impact in its first game. So that's, I'm happy about that. The secondary is starting to get healthy, so we're starting to make strides there. Overshown, he's back and he made an impact last week. So I really like what I see from this Cowboys team. Now, they did play each other the first week of the season, and the Cowboys just lost. I mean, they honestly could have won that game, but they did not. And so I feel like this is going to be kind of a similar game, where it's going to be close from the start, and it's going to be a battle, but I think the Cowboys are going to get this one, just because I think offensively, they are better. They are much better at big plays on the offensive side of the ball this season than the Eagles are. Now it's the defense. The defense for the Cowboys, are they going to be able to hunker down and make the big plays when they need to? I think they will this week. I think they're going to be able to stuff the run just because, you know, now you got Williams and Clark in the middle there. You got Overshown who's starting to get healthy. The secondary starting to get healthier. I just feel like the Cowboys are going to make the plays. They usually play well at home. I mean, they've kicked the Eagles' ass. For, I think, when Dak's a starter, I think they've won something like 10 in a row, 11 in a row. I know they've kicked the Eagles' ass with Dak at quarterback at home for quite some time. So I feel like that's going to play into this one. But I just think the Cowboys' defense is starting to get better. The offense is going to make the plays that they have to. And this is a division battle. And the Eagles, they are no... They're not kicking ass the way... Nobody is kicking ass this year, and anybody is beatable, and I just think this is one of those games that the Eagles are going to lose, and I've got the Cowboys winning a close one, 27-20. Then we have the Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Falcons are a 1.5-point favorite. Michael Penix Jr. is done at quarterback for the season with the Falcons. He injured his, I believe he tore his ACL, as a matter of fact. He injured his knee in some way, shape, or form. He is now out for the season. So Kirk Cousins is going to be in at quarterback for the rest of the way. He is a fully capable quarterback, so it's not like they're really losing anything, especially coming up against the Saints. The Saints are another terrible team that really has nothing to play for this season other than the first overall pick in the draft. But they don't have anything going on at quarterback. They don't have anything going on really at any position other than running back with Alvin Kamara, and he's not even really having that good of a year. So it's just a crapshoot for the Saints. Sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't. Whereas the Falcons, they've got Bijan Robinson. They've got some talent, and I just kind of feel like Kirk Cousins is going to want to show out in this one and say, hey, I'm still here. And just like I said, the Saints, just not a really good team at all. So I've got the Falcons winning this one 26-13. Then our Sunday night football matchup is a doozy. We've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are a 6.5-point favorite, which I think is a really high margin for the spread on that one, just because they're both pretty equal teams to me. Now, the Buccaneers are dealing with the injuries. That's their issue. They basically have a crapshoot of an offensive line, a crapshoot of a receiving core, and a crapshoot at the running back position. It's like you just don't know who's going to play, who's going to be injured, at what point in time, and it's pretty much just all carried by Baker Mayfield at this point. But the defensive side of the ball is playing excellent. The Rams, on the other hand, they are looking really good offensively and defensively. My thing with the Rams, though, and I keep seeing it every week with them, is they are front runners in the first half. Then the second half, like, they'll go into halftime, like, up 21-6. And you're looking at them like, oh, cool, the Rams are going to be rolling today. And then all of a sudden, it's like 21-20 in the fourth quarter. And you're like, why can't they score? And that's what I think is going to happen in this one. I just kind of feel like Tampa Bay, I mean, they went toe-to-toe with Buffalo last week and really almost had that one, other than just the couple of mistakes that they made. And I feel like that's going to be the opposite in this one because, like I said, the Rams, much better in the first half than they are in the second half. And even in their wins, they are not that great in the second half. And I feel it's definitely the opposite with the Buccaneers. They are solid from start to finish. They're a really, really tough team to beat offensively, defensively. They wear you down. They tear you down. And they just get at the quarterback. And I kind of feel like that's what's going to happen in this game, is that it's going to be a slim margin of error. And I just feel like the Buccaneers are going to stay in it the first half, and then just keep pushing the second half, and then just get away with it and do just enough in the second half of the game to maybe walk it off with a game-winning field goal or touchdown of that nature. And I've got the Buccaneers winning this one 28-24. But I'm expecting it to be a fun game just because these are two good teams with two really solid quarterbacks, with Stafford, Baker. Those two, I expect them to have good games. But I'm really looking at this one as both defenses. I wouldn't be shocked if either defense makes a big play, maybe even like a pick six or something of that nature, or just some big type of play that affects the game in the end at some point. All right, moving on to basketball and just how some of these teams keep dominating. And one of them is the Detroit Pistons. Like, let's get into Monday night. The Detroit Pistons beat the Indiana Pacers 127-112 to take their winning streak to 10 wins straight. And Jalen Durant, man, he just keeps continuing his monster season. He had a double-double with 31 points and 15 rebounds. And Cade Cunningham did not even play in this one. It was all Durant all night. Then another team that keeps rolling is Oklahoma City Thunder. They took down the New Orleans Pelicans 126-109. SGA had 23 points. Chet Holmgren had 26 points and 9 rebounds. And still only one loss on the season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Then also on Monday night, the Cleveland Cavaliers took down the Milwaukee Bucks 118-106. Donovan Mitchell dropped 37 points, and unfortunately, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he was injured in this one and ended up injuring his groin and is going to be out for a couple of weeks. Then on Tuesday, the Detroit Pistons continue winning, beating the Atlanta Hawks 120-112. That extends their winning streak to 11 wins. Cade Cunningham had a double-double with 25 points and 10 assists. Jalen Duran had 24 points and 8 rebounds. And this Detroit Pistons team, they are just suffocating everybody. They are playing great on the offensive side of the ball. They are dominating the paint. And then just suffocating on the defensive side of the ball and just playing excellent basketball right now. Excellent team basketball. And then on Tuesday night, LeBron James made his season debut coming back from injury. The Lakers squashed the Utah Jazz 140-126. LeBron had a small double-double for himself, 11 points and 12 assists. Luka had 37 points and 10 assists. Austin Reeves had 26 points, and DeAndre Ayton had 20 points and 14 rebounds in just a big game from all the starting five in this one. But it was nice, you know, LeBron is back. And like I said, I kind of feel like this is going to be obviously a Luka-led team with Reeves in there. But then you've got Ayton, you got LeBron, and you've got Smart in there. I feel like this is a very complete team with LeBron, with a healthy LeBron James in there. Then on Wednesday, the Oklahoma City Thunder kept on winning themselves. They took down the Sacramento Kings 113-99. SGA had 33 points and 8 rebounds. Chet Holmgren had 21 points and 7 rebounds. And the Oklahoma City Thunder moved on to increase their record to 15-1 on the season. And these are the defending champs. They are starting to remind me of the Golden State Warriors of their dynasty era, where they just, you know, they won the championship and then they came right out the gate and were like undefeated for a million years and ended up having the best record. So Oklahoma City's actually challenging that this year, and it looks like they've got a good shot at beating it. Then also on Wednesday night, Denver took down the New Orleans Pelicans 125-118. Nikola Jokic had yet another triple-double, 28 points, 12 assists, and 11 rebounds. And Peyton Watson had a career night with 32 points and 12 rebounds. And Denver just keeps on rolling. Another team that keeps on rolling, the Houston Rockets. They took down the Cleveland Cavaliers 114-104. Şengün had 28 points, 11 rebounds, and 7 assists. While Kevin Durant just dropped in a nice 20 points to carry this Houston Rockets team on, that just they are looking better and better as the season wears on. And then Thursday night, probably one of the most surprising teams in my opinion, the Philadelphia 76ers took down the Milwaukee Bucks 123-114. But man, Tyrese Maxey, he continues his amazing season, had a career night, dropped 54 points, which is a career high for him, added in 9 assists and 5 rebounds. And then Paul George, he made his debut for the season earlier this week with 21 points. We'll see how long Paul George is able to last, because you know he's a China doll who breaks as soon as he hits the court. But the 76ers definitely could use him. I kind of feel like with George and Embiid, they kind of just need to take it slow with them, especially with the way Maxey is playing this season. I mean, it's crazy. Nobody really expected Tyrese Maxey to do what he's doing with his career, and he has turned out to be one of the most consistent point guards we've got in the league today. Moving on to my top five this week. It's kind of a little late because, you know, we're a few weeks out past baseball season, but I didn't get to really do it because, you know, we were talking about baseball playoffs, and then I was making my basketball season predictions and all that. But in the midst of the baseball playoffs, Clayton Kershaw, the starting pitcher of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he ended up retiring. This was his last season. We all knew what was going to be his last season. He announced it before the playoffs that this was going to be it for him. But, I mean, easily Clayton Kershaw, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Not of just this era, but of all time. I mean, that's not even a question. The stats prove it. The championships prove it. The numbers prove it. I mean, he's been great when the Dodgers had down years, when the Dodgers were great, when the Dodgers were winning championships, when the Dodgers were losing. When he just was always consistently one of the best pitchers. To me, he, Justin Verlander, and Max Scherzer are three of the greatest pitchers of this era. So consistent, so dominating, so amazing. And I hope we all, and I'm a Dodger hater, but what Kershaw has done with his career is flat out amazing. So not only are we losing one of the greatest of all time, but it's like, to me, there's obviously a ton of moments to pick. So I got to do the top five Clayton Kershaw moments just because the dude is a legend. I mean, he's easily Hall of Famer. To me, he should be 100% Hall of Famer, but you know the way the stupid-ass Hall of Fame works. Babe Ruth didn't get 100%, so we can't give him 100%. So there'll probably be one or two idiots who are like, ugh, me can't do that, even though Clayton is irrefutably one of the greatest to ever, 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 ever do it. I mean, he's a three-time champion. He's a three-time Cy Young Award winner. He's won an MVP. He's done it all. He is a first ballot, 100% unanimous pick Hall of Famer, in my opinion. So let's get into the top five Clayton Kershaw moments. Beginning with number five, one of the most amazing feats you can have as a pitcher. And probably, gotta say, might be the last one to ever do this just because of the way the game is now. I mean, you don't really have pitchers who go past the sixth inning. I mean, a pitcher going to the sixth inning is practically a record these days because they get pulled so quick because they don't want him to get injured or hurt. But Clayton is the last member, and recently did it this year, of the 3,000 club. 3,000 strikeouts by a pitcher. He did it this year versus the Chicago White Sox. Vinny Capra was the victim. On July 2nd of this year, he became the 20th pitcher ever to do it, and only the fourth lefty to strike out 3,000 players. And I mean, like I said, not only is it because of the longevity of his career, but just the longevity of, I mean, the complete games that Kershaw has had throughout his career, it's crazy. And just like I said, it's really rare these days for a pitcher to even get past the sixth inning. So, I mean, to really reach 3,000 is going to be difficult. So, I mean, we may have seen the last guy to get to the 3,000 club. Now, I don't like to close doors on that because you just never know who's coming up next, but it's going to be pretty shocking if somebody even really sniffs the 3,000 club again. So this is not only an amazing feat because only 20 pitchers have done it ever, but this might be the last time ever that we see this happen in baseball. And if it's not the last time, it's probably going to take a while before we get another guy to get 3,000 strikeouts. Then at number four on my top five Clayton Kershaw moments, when he threw a no-hitter versus the Colorado Rockies on June 18th, 2014, not only was it a no-hitter that the Dodgers ended up winning 8-0, but he struck out 15 guys in this one. I mean, a no-hitter is always just a notch in your belt as a pitcher. But, you know, this was against the Rockies, their division rival. It was in Colorado, as a matter of fact, a home run hitter park. So it all worked out for Kershaw on this one. But the 15 strikeouts, I mean, just like I said, he's in the 3,000 strikeout club. But the 15 strikeouts was a big deal. He just pitched a beautiful, amazing gem in this one. And it was a part of an MVP Cy Young Award winning season for him as well. Then at number three on my top five Clayton Kershaw moments, his 2011 Cy Young Award winning season. And this season, he won the pitcher's triple crown. He had the lowest ERA, 2.28. He had the most strikeouts, 248, and the lowest WHIP at 98. And also had five complete games in this one, and just really had an amazing season. It was just it was only topped once ever in his career by one other season. But this 2011 season, it was basically Clayton Kershaw, basically from day one, was amazing. I mean, I even remember when he was coming up because I'm a Giants fan. So, of course, I'm familiar with who comes up with the Dodgers. And I remember in spring training, we would all hear about Kershaw and how great he was. And you just never know. It could just be bullshit. You just never know how things are going to pan out. But I just remember that spring training, he pitched lights out. And his first season was amazing. And he pitched lights out. And he just kept it moving. I mean, honestly, the only bad years in Clayton Kershaw's entire career are years he was injured. Other than that, the dude has been one of the most consistent ever. And this 2011 season was basically like the welcome to the league moment where it's like we all knew what was coming at some point, and 2011 was basically when he took over as one of the greatest pitchers of all time and of this era. Then at number two on my top five Clayton Kershaw moments, only one other season of his that is better than that 2011 season, and it's his 2014 season, in which not only did he win a Cy Young, his third Cy Young, as a matter of fact, but he won the MVP as well. And when a pitcher wins an MVP award, it's amazing. It's unheard of. It's like a running back winning the MVP award in the NFL. It's just very uncommon these days. And so for a starting pitcher to win the MVP, it just means he had the greatest possible season you can absolutely have. Not only did he do that, but he did win the Cy Young Award, and he did better than his Triple Crown Award winning year. He had a lower ERA with a 1.77 ERA. He had 21 wins on the season, 6 complete games, and that, like I said, he also threw that no-hitter in this season as well. It was about as perfect a season as Clayton Kershaw could have, other than not winning a World Series that year. That's about the only thing that really could have capped off that type of season for him. But I mean, just when you're talking on an individual level, that was his greatest season. He absolutely obliterated everybody that season, and he just was on top of the world in the 2014 season. But at number one on my top five Clayton Kershaw moments, it's actually three moments, and it's his three championships. He won his first championship in 2020 in the COVID-shortened season versus the Tampa Bay Rays. But even though it was a shortened season, the Dodgers absolutely dominated that year. But his playoff run specifically, that's one of – because Clayton Kershaw has a – what I would call a shaky postseason, where he always – regular season was always consistent. But the postseason, and you can't always blame it on him, but there are moments in his postseason where he got blown up. But not this 2020 season. He actually pitched out of his mind, and they would go on to win the championship that year, and that was his first of his three championships. His second championship was last year, 2024, versus the New York Yankees. It's not technically counted because he was injured for the majority of the year and didn't play in the postseason because of the injury. I think he only played, seven games in the 2024 season, but I still don't care because to me, Clayton, and I feel like this is how the Dodgers organization probably feels about it too, but even though he was injured, the Dodgers would not be in the position they're in these postseasons in their later years winning these championships without what Clayton Kershaw did at the beginning of his career and in years they did not win championships. Clayton Kershaw is a huge piece of this team, injured or not. So to me, I count that 2024 year because I don't care if you were injured. You were a part of that team. You did something on some level, even if it was just motivating your team. I bet you. I mean, I'd have no proof of this, but I bet you he would be in practice some days helping dudes, just saying, you know, I would pitch like this. I would pitch this guy like that, or I would do this. And if you're doing that, you are a part of the team in some way, shape, or form, just helping even if you were not out there pitching. And then, of course, his third championship was this year in the 2025 season versus the Toronto Blue Jays. He didn't really do a lot. He came in a couple of times, but, I mean, it's the tail end of Kershaw's career. He's been battling injuries really for probably the last, six, 7 years. But even so, the dude has been one of the most consistent pitchers, one of the greatest pitchers. I've respected the dude's career, even though he's been in Dodgers blue the entire time. But I can't hate it. I got to respect it. And he's a GOAT. And like I said, first ballot, unanimous decision Hall of Famer. I mean, the numbers support it. The championships support it. There's really nothing you can say bad about Clayton Kershaw's career. I mean, even when I was going through all of his accomplishments and shit, I'm like, this guy has been so consistent. Like I said, him, Verlander, and Scherzer. They are so consistent on every single level, their numbers, their championships, what they do in the postseason, what they mean to every team they've ever played on. It's just irrefutable what they've done for this era, but for baseball in general, especially Clayton Kershaw. And so I salute you, dude, even though you used to kick the shit out of my Giants, I salute you, and I'm glad you're retired because now I no longer have to see you kick the shit out of my Giants because even in your years where you were struggling through injuries, still would kick the shit out of my Giants. So I'm happy that he's retired. I'm glad you're headed off into the sunset because you deserve it. You worked really hard, and I'll be happy to see you just cheering on the Dodgers from now on. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.